Hello.
Hello. Hello.
We just jumped into it today.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing good. How are you doing? I saw some fun stuff from today.
I'm doing well, actually. been having a little bit of a, how do you say it, like a break from everything that is YouTube this week, because there's been a lot of things happening since we talked the last time, both for you and me.
Yeah.
Should we start on your end? Like, what have you been up to?
Let's just catch up, and it just so happens that we're recording it. So we can just have our normal thing. Yeah. We went out of town for a few days last week, which is cool. We went to like the central coast of California, which is shockingly cold in the summertime. Like, it's very rainy and like freezing, and it was super neat for us because we've been in the heat for months, and that was really fun. And I brought I tried not to do any work during that trip, but I did end up bringing the Sony A7S III, because I'm like working on my review for it, so I just wanted to grab footage everywhere, and like the slow motion of like big waves crashing into rocks was super fun. And then I also brought my Canon XL1, the old like 20-year-old camera, for a video I'm working on that. And I ended up using
on Instagram.
I ended up using it most of the time, and it was super funny because like we went to this beach, and as soon as we got there, like the first thing somebody said, they were like, "Whoa, that's a cool camera. Are you doing like wildlife stuff?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's like this 20-year-old camera." But I got an adapter for it that lets me use my current lenses with the 20-year-old camera, and it's so weird. So I'm having a lot of fun with that. That was what we did last week, and then this week has been a lot of like catching up because we were gone for, you know, half the week. That's kind of what I've been up to for the most part.
That's awesome.
Yeah, how about you?
Having
on your
a good
end?
Time with the family.
Yeah, I mean, it was really nice. Like, we got to see my parents. I hardly ever get to see them, only a couple times a year. So it was like, it's super nice to like see everyone and just, you know, just to get away from it all.
Yeah, I can imagine. And man, I've been a little bit more intense. I went to Swedish biggest island from Gothenburg to drive there. It's approximately like 3.5 hours, and then you have to take a ferry for another 3 hours to be able to get there.
Jeez.
So the plan was to shoot this music video on the initial plan was Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, full days. And that was like, yeah, it's going to be enough time. And then someone said like, oh, I'm not going to be able to make it the last day, so we're going to have to go home on Tuesday morning. And they were like, God damn it. And then we took, like, we left at 5 a.m. in the morning and went all the way across country just to realize that the ferry has been delayed for 4 hours. And we hadn't really scouted any location on the place that we were going to, because we thought that it was going to be so good to have 4 hours to be able to scout the location on the island.
Of course, right. Oh, boy.
So we got there, and we arrived just in time for golden hour sunset and rigged everything up, just started shooting. But it all went good, but it was intense.
Yeah, the photos and stuff looked awesome, and I think it was in yesterday's video, a recent video, you said you probably won't be able to show it for like a couple months, but do you feel good about being able to make like a good video from it?
Yes, I feel very good, because this is something different in the sense that it's not a YouTube video, it's not a paid YouTube video, it's a music video that's going to be watched by hundreds of thousands of people that are fans of this band. So it's kind of something bigger for me when it comes to video production and videography overall, and I think that is really, really cool.
It is. Your video that you did yesterday was super good. I mean, as we're recording this, the video that came out yesterday, I think, is called "It All Led Me Here, It All Led to This."
Yeah. Thank you.
That was such a cool story. I mean, we've heard like bits and pieces of it, but in the video you talk about, you know, like working at your normal job and just sort of starting with no knowledge about this, working on the apparel thing, and then photo video kind of comes into it. But you talk about, you know, several years ago being like, I don't know what f-stop is and ISO.
Yeah.
And to go from that to, like, you know, to a bigger project like this, in addition to hundreds of YouTube videos, plus paid things, plus other commercial stuff. Yeah. It's like, that's pretty crazy to see. Like,
it is. And we've talked about this before, but it is very surreal. And
yeah,
same goes for you. I mean, like, you quit your job and now you're doing YouTube full time. What is this going to lead to? That is what the cool thing about it is, in my opinion.
Yeah, because you think you have a goal and you think like, well, I want to get to that goal, and then you get there and you're like, but okay, now what? Like, where does it go from there?
Yeah,
and you can't really predict that. Were you I forget the band's name that you did the video
Dead
for
by April?
Yes, were you a fan of theirs? Have you been a fan of theirs?
The fun thing is that 12 years ago, I think it is, they dropped they dropped a single that was called Losing You, that was included into, I don't know if you have it, but basically a survival program where a bunch of participants is stranded on an island and then they have to survive. There's a bunch of different tasks. Here in Sweden, we called it Robinson.
We have a show called Survivor that's sort of the same thing.
Yeah, I think that is the same kind of concept. So that single was bought into the commercial and teaser for that program. And when that launched on TV, like, the band skyrocketed to, they had to go on tour. They had to participate in big TV sent stuff. And, you know, I knew them ever since, but I haven't listened to them for the last couple of years. But now the fun part is that the singer and the bass player have started to pick up an interest for photography and videography. Hence, they are watching my videos on YouTube.
Oh, that's so cool. Okay.
So they got in contact with me like, hey, man, we watch your stuff on YouTube and think it's so good. Would you be interested in shooting a music video to get with us? And I'm like, let's do it.
That's great. That's super cool for a thousand different reasons, but it's really neat to, like, not just meet, you know, people that you're a fan of, but you're like collaborating together. It's not like I'm a fan and you're the band and like sign my autograph thing. It's like, oh, I am a filmmaker, video person, you're musicians, let's collaborate together, like, as equals on a project. That's a different level of just super cool. And it's crazy. They must have found like video stuff and been like, this guy's from our area. Like, we should reach out.
Yeah, I think they knew, you know, because they are in Gothenburg. So they've seen my videos, you know, where I include Gothenburg and stuff like that. But the cool thing is that they are like, we were all, as you said, we were all equal, you know, there's just four dudes that enjoy to create music. And then there's me that enjoy to create videos. And we just had a blast. It was such an amazing time.
That's cool.
Even though we got like super, super tiny amount of sleep, but it was so much fun.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the end results. It's really neat. Like, you talk about, you never know where these things come up. This was pre-COVID, but a couple years ago, I made a video with a tilt shift lens. Like, I was able to rent like an actual tilt shift lens that moves, and it's a super weird thing. And I made a video about it. So I just went to, like, there was a local like food festival here. So I kind of went there and like filmed some stuff and put out the video. The video did not do well. Like, it did not get very many views and or anything, but it was the weirdest thing because it was so specialized. I found it on a website, I think it was Studio Binder, which is like a filmmaking resource website. They did a whole article that included it, because it was like one of the only videos about tilt shift lenses. But then I got a Instagram message from a couple of the people who helped put on the Coachella music festivals, because I live in the same town that the Coachella festivals happen in. And apparently they wanted to do an art exhibit that involved like tilt shift stuff of the crowds, so everyone looks like miniatures. They didn't know anything about it. So they went on YouTube, looked up tilt shift photography, found my video. And then in the video, they were like, wait, this looks like here. Like when, you know, all the stuff I had filmed at like the little food festival, they were like, that's this town. And then they looked into me, reached out to me. So then we met and kind of became friends. And then this was right before COVID hit. But there was like all stuff about like leading to like student internships and donations to the media program I was teaching, like crazy cool stuff that came out of it just because I made this video, which by all accounts was kind of a failure of a video. Like it did not do well on YouTube, but it, you never know, you know, when people see stuff, where it's going to go.
No. That's cool. And I think that that is like the coolest thing about it, because you think of, as we've talked about several times, you know, the views, the algorithm and all that, but you never know whose eyeball one of those views are, you know?
Right. It can be
like the highest of positions in Hollywood that sees your video, and then you get an email saying like, hey, do you want to do a movie? You don't know.
Yeah, it's true. Like the video that I left my very first YouTube comment on, which was Heather's video, Now We're Married, it didn't even occur to me. Like, I didn't even know this until a couple weeks ago when we were talking about this, where that video doesn't even have 100 views. But like, yeah, that was the video that I watched it, and it, for
those
some reason,
two eyeballs.
Yeah, it led me to leave my first YouTube comment, which changed everything. I never even thought of looking at how many views the video had, and it has like 80 views or something, and it's 5 years old. So she's like, it's not a, you know, it's not a viral video on YouTube that you were just one of millions of people watching. It's like very, very small, but you never know, you know? And that's one of the crazy, unpredictable things about it. It's just so weird.
Yeah. And I think that is also the opportunities that you never know when they're going to happen. Because something that I realized as well is that even though my views are down, we don't have to jump into that again. But they're still down for those of you listening.
It's me too.
Going
me too.
Like crap.
Yay.
but I have had way more emails with business opportunities coming in the last month compared to the entirety of last year.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been weird, because I don't know if it's because I have been, I don't know what it is, but there's just been like 10 business opportunities. So, and most of them I actually don't take. I try to just send them along to someone else that I know that can take the job. But I think it's interesting, because now, even though my views are down, I still have the opportunities coming in that I never thought I would be having, you know?
That's interesting. It shows that they don't care as much about where things are right now, but they care more about you and like the thing that you built and the, you know, the brand.
And back to what we've talked about before, you know, As I've said in my previous videos as well, I know how to make a poker B-roll, you know? Mm-hmm. I already have the skills. So what I think is happening is that companies might find one of those videos that I made, and then they see that and they're like, oh, you know, this dude actually knows how to film stuff, so maybe we're going to hire him for a project that we can do. Or maybe they've seen my vlogs and think that, oh, he's really good at editing. Because I actually got a reach out from one of the world's biggest companies, which is called IKEA.
I've heard of them.
The fun thing was that they reached out to me and was like, hey, we are interested in getting a videography course where you go through like the editing, the fast-paced cuts, and what you think about when you're shooting the video. Because they like what they see in my vlogs. You know, it's very fast-paced. It's very interesting, keeps up the engagement. And that is something that bigger companies is lacking, you know, how to do good edits, because most companies can do corporate videos.
Right.
And the like interviews and those kind of stuffs, but getting the professional quality edits, even though you are posting it social media, how do you do that? And I'm not saying that I'm a pro, but I'm saying that when it comes to the editing part, I am confident.
I mean, at this point, God would call you a pro. Like,
it's I don't know. Like, I think that pro is such a weird,
I know,
weird thing, because it has to define you as a professional within what you do. I don't think I'm a professional. I think that I'm confident in my editing, and I know that that confidence oozes through mm-hmm. to other people.
Well, and you can solve problems too, because that's such a big, like, when it comes to, I think, anything to do with computers, editing, software, that kind of stuff, a lot of it isn't like what you can do, but it's just knowing that you can get the job done. So if they asked you to do something, or somebody hired you to do something and you didn't totally know how to do it, you'd figure it out. Like, you would do whatever you need to do to make it happen, solve the problem, which is then going to be good for them, because they're going to get the thing they paid for. But then you're also going to get a new skill. Like, you're going to now know how to do something. And so it's, you know, it's kind of a win-win. And I think that's a really important thing, is not having, like, you don't have to wait until you know everything about everything before you can start working with people. It's more about, like, knowing that you can solve the problem when you need to, and then you'll be able to give them.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a really important skill.
And when it comes to editing, it's like something that I've said before, and something that we've talked about, is good editing can save really bad footage, but bad editing can destroy really good footage.
Yes. Oh my.
And that is so true, because if you don't know how to edit, then like, you can shoot the best kind of exposed shots, you can shoot the best B-roll looking shots, but holy crap. So if you don't practice on editing the videos that you do, then there's something that's going to be missing from what you have created.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's a YouTube channel, a guy named Matt Johnson. He's in Texas, and he's a wedding filmmaker, and he's really good. Like, his videos are super good. And every once in a while he does live streams where he critiques people's wedding films. And I think it takes a lot of guts to submit your work to be critiqued on a live stream.
It does.
And it's crazy, because I was just watching one the other day. I don't do wedding stuff, but it's so interesting. Like, wedding stuff is interesting to me because it has to be so good and you can't redo anything. So it's like, you have to capture it right away and then work with whatever you got, because you can't redo it.
True.
And it was interesting because several of the projects that I saw, it was like you said, they were filmed really well. Like, they looked great. The shots were awesome. Everything was perfect. But the editing was like really weird and like off, and the music didn't fit, and the shots were in like kind of a confusing sequence where, you know, it just didn't make sense. And I really stood out to me as like, wow, the editing, these are beautiful shots. Like, I would be so proud if I filmed this stuff, but this video is kind of like feeling weird because of how it's all edited together, which I know is obvious, but when you really see it. And then I was thinking, like, well, this is actually a thing that was given to a couple. Like, this is what they got as their final result. And I'm sure they were happy with it. But it really just shows, like, it's everything coming together to make a good thing, not just like, I got a good shot.
It is.
Yeah. It's.
Yeah. But then, like, the cool thing is that when you jump into the editing process, you also realize that even though you got the best shots ever, that was something that I did with the music video, because I got so many good shots. And then you're like, oh man, I gotta kill those off. They don't fit into the vibe of the music video. You know, I gotta just say goodbye. But it's also about the saying, as someone says, kill your darlings and make sure that you only include the good parts, because if you don't do that, it's not going to be good.
That's one of my favorite sayings. They drill that home because my college degree is in English. And so, like, I believe the origins of that term came from writing, like 100 years ago is when it first showed up.
Yeah, probably.
People get obsessed with like this little paragraph or this little sentence they wrote. And it's like, get rid of that and the whole thing becomes so much better. But it's the same thing with video. You get this shot, they're like, this is perfect. And then you're just like, you know, I got to get rid of it, because it's just like, it's messing everything else up, and the whole piece is stronger without just that one thing. And it's, you know, I can even think back to like students. I'm sure like people who've worked with employees have the same thing. Like when I was teaching, I had students who would be incredibly talented and super skilled, but kind of annoying to work with. Like they kind of had big egos and thought, you know, their stuff was the best. And it got to the point where it was
down to the ground, boy.
It got to the point where it's like, if we needed to do something that was a team effort and it needed to be done well and on time, I would rather put together a team of slightly less skilled students who were easier to work with than bring in this person who was way more talented, but was going to make the whole project like an ego thing that was a nightmare. And it's kind of like that same thing. Like I know, you know, you got to like look at the thing as a whole and do what's best to make it the strongest, whether it's like a team or shots or editing or whatever. It's like, you're just constantly revising and strengthening the whole piece.
I think team efforts is definitely what's going to build a stronger skill set, you know, because when you can work with someone that is better than you, that is the optimal thing, because then you can learn so much.
Yeah.
For me, that is kind of something that I would love to have within the editing, because I feel like if I had someone that was editing my videos that is way better than me, I would be very interested in seeing how that person works for like a week. I would sit next to that person like, what are you doing? Like, how are you creating the stories? How are you connecting all the clips to make it the most intriguing video there is?
I know. I've thought about that before. Like, I bet if I went through my YouTube subscriptions, any channel, doesn't matter the genre or the size of the channel, but I bet if I could shadow them for like a day or two while they work on a project and like just see what they do, I bet I would learn something super cool from anybody, because like there's just so many ways to do it. And it's so easy to get stuck in your way of like, this is how I do it and this is how I will always do it.
I know. Fun thing is, I was actually talking with Terry yesterday on iMessage, and we talked a little bit about this, how vloggers that are getting like 50 to 100,000 views on each video, even though they don't have millions of subscribers, but what they do well is that they know how to edit to get you hooked, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We are like, in our niche, we are very like linear. It's either a product review or it's a, you know, tutorial, or it's a vlog that no one watches. But thing is, if we look back to, I think that Casey did this as well. He always threw in like the first 15 seconds was the most interesting part of the video, and then took you back to the beginning of the video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have been very stuck in the whole like linear thought process for the last, I don't know, maybe like 6 months. So me and Terry talked about that. If we could start doing that, those vlog style creators, if we could do what they are doing and like change up the thumbnails so that the thumbnails look way more clickbaity, but they're not, you know?
Right, because they deliver on what...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's what's so hard is like, it really feels like on the YouTube platform right now, there's some sort of shift, and a lot of us need to change the way that we've been doing things and adapt in some way.
Yes.
And I feel like personally, I'm struggling to figure out how and what to do with that. But it really feels like there's, you know, in a way, it feels like the frustration right before there's a big leveling up. Like you just feel like, oh, this isn't working. And then finally you like click, like you unlock it, and then boom, you go to the next level. Haven't figured that out yet, but it feels like that's what's happening, because so many people say the same thing, like, oh, this isn't stuff I've been doing.
I totally agree.
Isn't happening. And it makes me so interested in creators like Marquez Brownlee or iJustine or the people who've been around for like 10 or 12 years, and they've had to, like, they're doing the same thing. You know, if you look at an MKBHD video from this week versus 2012, they're different in terms of quality, but it's the same guy like doing the same basic thing, but they've had to find different ways to adapt throughout the different eras of the platform. And that's, I think, why they've been able to survive so long. And I feel like we're at the point where it's another shift and people need to adapt and approach things in a new way, I think. Don't know what it is, though, but that's what I think is happening.
Yeah, but I think you're right, because it feels just as you say, you know, it feels like it's, there's some point, because right now there's so many creators out there that are doing the same thing that we've always done, or like, I can only talk for the last 2 years, but we're doing the same thing that we've done for the last 2 years, but it starts to not work.
Right.
You know? So in, as Terry wrote to me, he said, like, we are always inspired by those who grew before us. You know, I was very inspired by Peter McKinnon and his thumbnails. So I had to make the best looking thumbnails because he set the standard very high. And then along came other creators that had the same thing. And now everyone has so much high quality videos and thumbnails when it comes to YouTube. So, like, what do we do next? We got to step out of that and create something unique, because otherwise we cannot get the click.
Yeah, and that's funny, because for so long, a lot of channels in like our realm have been about how to take better photos, make better videos, get better sound. And
yeah,
now because of that, everybody has better quality stuff, because everybody's been learning. And so then it is like, okay, well, now everyone knows how to do all this stuff really well. So yeah, what is the next thing that's going to differentiate you, or what is the thing that you can share with people that they don't even know that they're going to be interested in, or that they don't even know they need to know how to do, or whatever. And it's, you know, I don't know how to answer those questions, but those are the things that are the most interesting is, you know, when you make a video and people are like, oh my gosh, this changes, like, this is the video I didn't know I needed. That kind of a thing is really cool.
Exactly. And I think that is kind of where, like, talking about channel shifts, I think that, for example, looking at mine, we're going to take the gardening B-roll that I shot together with Oscar. The fun thing with that is that we just had fun. There was no agenda behind that. And Nanlite was like, oh man, it's so good. And I posted that to Instagram, and it has over 50,000 views on Instagram. But when I posted it onto YouTube, it got like 7,000 or 8,000, maybe like 10,000 in 1.5 days. So like, for me, it doesn't work going back to doing what I have done before.
Yeah.
Because if I post a B-roll or behind the scenes, then that doesn't really perform the way that it did 1 year ago, 1.5 years ago. So being unique is about finding new ways that work and how I can incorporate what I want to do together with what the algorithm thinks is a good thing to push.
Right. That, that's an age-old question, but yeah.
It is, but it's going to be fun to see now. Talking about what happened today when I took my Mars rover out.
It's so cool.
The fun thing here is that last time I did a very, very quick contraption to make sure that I could fit the gimbal on it. And that time around, it was my A7 III. This time around, it was the A7 S3. Mm-hmm. And a much more serious construction, may I say.
Yeah. I can imagine, like, with the stabilization of the camera plus the gimbal, it's going to look like a drone is, like, an inch above the ground. Like, super cool.
Almost. It looks... Last time around, I'm going to say it looked so bad we couldn't use any of the footage. This time, though, it looks very smooth.
It's cool because it's not even just a gimmick. Like, it is sort of like, what if I did this and put this on this thing? But it's also super useful. Like, I can think of 1,000 reasons why people would need something like that or want to make something like that, because it can do things in a really unique way that you couldn't do otherwise. So I'm really excited to see what it actually looks like. I'm very scared for your camera going so fast on top of it. But.
Dude, I almost tipped over 2 times. It was not towards the sides because I tested it out. Like, it really, really stable, even though it's the side, because I strapped on like another tire on each tire. Mm-hmm. But when, like, going in the front, it's a little bit front heavy. So it was like, ooh, whoop. Oh. But it looks good. Man. And I think it's going to be usable if I can adjust the tires so that they are perfectly aligned, because now I have a slight bump up and down because the tires are a little bit off axis.
Right. Okay.
But
makes sense.
Other than that, I think it's actually going to be a usable solution to get some fast-paced shots of someone running, maybe a car, something similar.
Yeah, well, it's almost like a weird FPV thing because you can go, you know, you can go under really low stuff, and
yeah,
and the quality is going to be 10 times better than, you know, any FPV drone would be, because it's full frame, you know, mirrorless camera with a nice lens on it. That's crazy. I know we like love on the Sony a lot, but playing with it more and like going away with it for a while, I haven't really experienced how good the stabilizer is. It's so, like, you don't really need anything else. Like you could just be handheld with the camera, and especially if you then flip it into, you know, 120 FPS. Which has been really fun. I've been like, even in here when I do like product shots, I've been playing around a lot more with just doing like handheld weird, basically doing what you do, like taking the camera and just like moving it in weird ways that like a slider can never move in, or even a gimbal would have a hard time fitting, but you can it's so cool. Like, I've never had that ability before, and it works so, so well.
I know.
Yeah. It's the other day, this was just funny and I wanted to leave it in a video, but I keep laughing about this. I was doing a microphone video, this was the first time I ever actually asked a company to sponsor a video. I've never done that before, but I had an idea and I reached out to Artlist and I was like, hey, I want to do this. Will you sponsor? And they're like, yeah, okay. so I was filming a microphone, and I was filming it in front of my computer monitor with like some texture video playing on the background. So it's kind of a cool like little technique. And I don't know what happened, but usually on B-roll shots, even if the camera has a stabilizer on, I'll put the Final Cut Pro stabilizer on, because it really makes everything just like really locked down and solid. And I don't know what happened with this, but I put the stabilizer on, and it was just a microphone sitting there with like footage in the background, and it went through all the smooth shots. Then it got to that one. The whole thing was just like vibrating up and down, like, I don't know, it was like a dubstep song or whatever. And I was like, I don't know what the stabilizer did, but for some reason, obviously I didn't leave it in the video because it would have been ridiculous, but I can't stop thinking about it and laughing about it. It's like the weirdest, I don't know. So sometimes stabilizers don't always work super well. But for the most part, it's been great. And anyway, this stabilizer with that gimbal on that car is going to be awesome.
I hope. I haven't really looked through all the footage, but I'm going to do it soon. And I really hope that this is going to be a fun video, because I spent the entire day yesterday trying to create some sort of like wire suspended gimbal mechanism. And then like when the clock was 6 p.m., I was like, fuck this. You know, it doesn't work. Doesn't work the way I need bigger wires. Mm-hmm. So instead of getting like, I think I used like 2 millimeter thick wires, shouldn't be that thick. And then I stepped up to like 6 millimeters. So it's like 3 times as thick, or 2 times. But this time around, it's actually holding up, and I added 6 wires to it, and now it feels a lot sturdier. Hopefully, don't need anything else, but maybe like 2 more wires would be perfect.
This sounds like a super fun project. I'm excited. And I'm excited to see the video, just to see it.
Also, the reason that I did this was because I wanted to take a little bit of a break from everything that was YouTube, and basically thinking about YouTube and all the clickbaits and thumbnails and yada yada here and there. So I was supposed to make a video today for a brand that I haven't made. And I'm not even entirely sure that I'm going to make it, even though there's a lot of money involved. But I've been feeling very demotivated lately to make any sort of sponsored tutorial video.
Right.
So I don't know if I'm going to make the video or if I'm just going to leave it as is and just neglect the money. But I don't know.
Yeah, it's been
fun to just do something for me.
Yeah, well, I think that's really, really important, and that's like I mentioned, reaching out to Artlist to sponsor something. But it was like that's a video I was going to make anyway, so it was just like, oh hey, if I'm gonna make this video anyway, do you guys like? Sure, you know, YouTube numbers are down. Would you like to sponsor this video for me?
Yeah, of course.
And that's cool, but that is different than feeling like you're almost doing a client project for your own channel, because you know it's just a different feeling when it's just a different feeling. It's hard to describe, but I totally get where you're coming from. And the money's not even relevant for the most part when it comes to that, because it just makes you feel bad.
I mean, like the thing is, for this project, there would be like $7,500, which is a lot of money, of course. Like, I'm not saying that I don't want the money. Of course, I want the money, but to sit down and to make this tutorial, I don't know if I'm going to do it yet, but if I am, it's going to be the sole purpose to get the money. I'm going to be straight up with that. And it's not going to be for the fun of making the tutorial.
Right, like a creative experience.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, a tutorial that I make has to be like, it has to come as something that I want to teach. Like, I have some stuff from the gardening B-roll that I want to share. But it also feels like sit down, record all of that. It's just going to be like another video where I show you something that I've already shown you like 2 years ago that is still not going to be.
Here's just a better looking version of it.
Yeah, I think, and I think that is good as well, but it's not really, really that fun to do. But sometimes you got to do that well, I think.
Yeah, it's tricky. There's thinking about what you were just saying about the car video. I've got several ideas for videos I want to do that are like kind of different than normal. Definitely going to be more work and like just more work and bigger projects, but I'm excited about them, but they're going to take a lot of time to do. And I don't know that they would necessarily perform well, but I'm excited about the idea. And so I've been putting them off because it's like, well, I don't know if I want to spend, you know, the whole week now working on this thing if it's just going to not do that well. And I can just do I can do what is expected, and which I like. It's not like I'm complaining about that. And it's, you know, quicker, easier. I have the whole workflow down. But if that stuff isn't performing as well, it's almost like, well, we might as well just do the thing that you're excited about. And I guess even if it doesn't do well, it's like you get the fun of doing it, the fun of making it. You'll learn stuff along the way. Yeah. even if it, you know, 10 out of 10 or whatever on your YouTube studio.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there's been a lot of questions, for example, about if I can make a studio tour again, because people seem to like the studio, which is super awesome. And I like the studio. But I think I made like 3 studio tour videos, and there's not much that has changed, especially not here in this part of the office, my main part. So like making a studio tour video would just be revisiting what I've already said and package it in a new manner. And I think that 1 year is a very good like stretch for those videos, but doing them anytime sooner would just be trying to milking it in a way.
Yeah, it is funny because I think every time I've done like a lighting setup, a studio tour, a desk setup video, by the time the video is done, like something has already changed, you know? Like I published the video and it's like, oh no, now this thing is moved, or, you know, I'm using a different thing over here. But yeah, you can't, because how many times do people just want to look at your desk? It's almost like the B-rolls, like people ask for it, but then if you just do, here's my monthly desk setup video or studio tour video, people are going to be like, well, okay, we've seen your table like a bunch of times. But yeah, every year, that's when you can change, like your workflow changes, your some of your crucial gear could change. And it's nice to see the updates. Because I'm also really interested in that stuff when it is what people actually use. It drives me crazy when something comes out like, you know, here's a new camera. I see this a lot with like little action cameras where it's like, this will replace my giant, you know, Sony FX6 or something. And it's like a little tiny action camera. I'm like, okay. And then you never see it again on that channel. And it's like, well, what's the camera you're actually using? And a lot of times, you know, it's not the newest, or, you know, sometimes it is, like everyone uses a Sony now, it seems like, but, you know, and a lot of times, it's, you know, people will be using sort of the same thing they've used for a few years. It might not be the latest and greatest, but it's the thing they keep coming back to. That's what I'm super interested in. Like, what are the real tools that people use, not just the newest thing that came out this month or this season? And I'm fascinated with that stuff. But yeah, once you show it, if it's the same stuff you use for 6 months or a year or two, it's like, well, you showed it.
I've actually been thinking about what you just said, you know, how the reviews always go for like the latest and greatest. Of course, you know, that's how it works. You know, companies send us product and then we make a review of it. But for me, for example, I get a lot of questions, people saying like, should you buy the FX3 or are you going to buy the FX3? Are you going to buy the R5? Are you going to buy the ZV-E10? And I'm like, no, not really. Like, I'm super satisfied with A7S III. And this is one of those cameras that I feel that I'm going to use for the next 3 years as my main cameras when it comes to content creation. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, it might be some new cameras coming in the future. Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows?
That I might use for bigger productions. But when it comes to my daily drivers, the A7S III is going to be, I'm not going to buy a new camera for a really long time, I think. And it's also probably not going to be released a new camera. Even if the A7 IV is released, I'm not going to go and get the A7 IV because I have two A7S IIIs that are doing my job way better than I could ever imagine 2 years ago.
right. Yeah, and it's, you know, I think that's also something that's happened is everything has gotten really good. So not only have people's skills leveled up, but the gear is good, and so it's not, it reminds me of like
everyone's video looks amazing.
It's like I remember watching the Apple keynotes that used to come out every year when like in 2004 or 2005, when every year a new iPod would come out and it would be a huge change. Like, it can hold five times as many songs, it has a color screen now, it can play video. Like every year was a huge change. Even the early iPhones, you know, going from the original one to the 3G, it was like crazy different changes every year. But now everything's matured to a point where it's like, yeah, the camera's a little better. the screen is nice. Like, I don't know. It comes in a different color. You know, everything's good. And cameras and that kind of gear is sort of the same thing. Like, you know, the A7S III is better than the ZV-E10. The ZV-E10 is really good and super affordable. A Fuji camera is super good. A Canon camera is super good. Like, you can split hairs and go about, well, this does 10 bits, 16, whatever. But ultimately, if you buy any camera that was made in the last year or two, it's going to be really good. And it's going to come down a lot more to what you do with it than the thing itself. So we've sort of passed that point of you need the latest and greatest because it's enabling you to do something you couldn't do before. And it is more like, well, now we have all this stuff, what do we do with it? Like we talked about a minute ago, you achieve your goal, then what? And it's almost like culturally we're at that point with everything and just need to figure out what the next thing is, where to go from there.
I totally agree with what you just said. And it feels like even though people have access to, say, for example, the A7S III with the best lenses possible, they might not even use it as they thought they would initially, you know?
Right.
For example, when I tried the A7S III for the first time, I was like, oh my God, it has like 10-bit color space. This is the best thing ever. But I rarely use that when I'm shooting my YouTube videos. I go back and use 8-bit because both file size, but also being able to work with it on my computer, unless I want to sit on the M1 Mac Mini. But I think that, like, even though you have the options, you don't necessarily use all of them. And I think that the A7 III is still going to be a very good camera for quite some time. And, you know, do the best with the camera that you got. And I think that, you know, the dude that was on my channel a while back with wildlife stuff.
Yeah.
He is using the A7 III for everything. Of course, he wants to have the A7S III. But the thing that he does is that he is taking the A7 III and using its full potential to be able to capture the best kind of wildlife that he can with that camera. And I think that that is so cool.
Yeah. And it's funny. There's a lot of like younger YouTubers that I like follow on Twitter and stuff. I mean, like literally kids who are like 15, 16. I'm thinking of Leo Keller. I don't know if you've ever seen any of his videos. He's super good. I don't know how old he is. He's definitely still in high school. He uses the A7 III, which I don't know how he got it, but he's had it for a long time. I think he saved up for a long time to get it. He got it. That's his only camera. And when I see a lot of like, it tends to happen with younger kids just because they don't have the resources to like get every new piece of gear or whatever. and they really do learn how to maximize everything. Like, they know everything about that specific camera. When I think of Leo and he makes videos with the A7 III, like he knows how to maximize every setting, every option, every feature, work around every limitation and create amazing looking stuff with that camera. And I think it's so easy. I know this is not new. I'm not giving new information, but it's easy to go like, well, I'll get the next new thing and this camera has a better whatever, and then I'll be better. And it's like, at a certain point, not really. It's you got to put in the time to build the skills, learn about it, learn what it means. What is the difference between 8-bit and 10-bit, and when do you need to use them? Like, Why would you switch between them rather than just going like, I'm going to get the camera that has 10-bit, and then you just leave it in full auto mode with, you know, with 8-bit color because that's all you need.
That's the thing. I remember, again, back to when I tried the A7S III the first time, it was like 12-bit RAW. This is the most amazing thing ever with the Ninja Atmos or Ninja Atmos 5. And I was like, this is something that I need. And I tried it once and thought it looked like crap and haven't used it since.
it's a whole different thing in the workflow to then start bringing that in.
You gotta attach the monitor to the camera, you gotta connect the HDMI out, you gotta make sure that you have the right exposure, you gotta make sure that you can process the raw files, enough memory on the SSD drive, like there's
batteries being charged, different kinds of batteries, like it's
and also you have to add the sharpening, you have to add the denoise when you come into post. And all of those stuff, but I'm like, nah, it's too much of a hassle.
Yeah, I was shocked actually when I got my Sony because it was new. I was like, oh, I was really happy with how it looked, but it didn't look the way that I thought it would. Like, it didn't have quite the clarity and the punch. And so I ended up messaging a whole bunch of people that I like kind of knew that I knew used the Sony, just going like, hey, you know, what are you doing on yours? And I was shocked at how many people were like, oh yeah, I'm just using like the basic picture profile. I'm not even using SLR. Like, everyone was kind of using really basic settings that were getting the better results. And I was like, oh, interesting. Okay. And that was cool because that was an easier answer than like, yeah, I spend 18 hours color grading every shot I take. It's like, oh no, you just, you know, the camera's pretty good and then you can take it further if you want to. But at its basic level, it's pretty friggin' good.
Oh yeah. And I think that that is also the most, I don't know what you say. That's the best thing, because then you can just plug in the camera, you can start using it, and then you get a good picture and it starts to like create your entire workflow and makes it so much easier. But then again, back to depending on what you're shooting, you know, because right. that is where the key part is. If you're shooting high-end productions or maybe a commercial for a big company, then yeah, of course, you might need to have the 10-bit or even the 12-bit and RAW and to be able to process the white balance when you get into post and all that stuff. But if you're just doing YouTube, I mean, like, you can get away with a ZV-1. Come on.
Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, you get away with a phone. Like, it's, you know, there's so many people we talk to that are like, yeah, my channel, I grew it to 50,000 subscribers using my 2-year-old phone, you know? Like, there's there's so much. You know, going all the way back to the trip I took last week visiting my parents, they're not, like, huge into tech or anything, but my mom just happens to have, like, the iPhone 12 or whatever the newest iPhone is. And, you know, we were out. Like, Heather and I were out doing stuff, and my mom was, like, taking videos, candid videos, and then sent me the videos. And I was like, God, this looks so good. I was like, what am I doing? Like, what do I have? You know, which I know there are reasons, but it was shocking of just, like, this looks really good and would totally be usable for, like, a lot of stuff, especially if it's, you know, talking head type things. You know, like, you wouldn't go film a professional band music video with an iPhone or anything, probably. But yeah, it's crazy just how good everything is. And, you know, it's all accessible. And I don't know, it's great. And now I don't know what to do with it because everything is good.
We can hereby say that we have reached the point that we are so satisfied with our cameras and lenses that we don't need anything else.
Yeah, it's just for fun. It's like how I have 5 guitars sitting over here. I cannot play 5 guitars at once, but it's really fun to, like, this one is blue and this one is green. Sometimes I want to hold a green one. Like, it's, you know, we're at that point with cameras. Like, everything is great. If I wanted another one or another thing, it would just be sort of for the fun of it, than like, oh, I need a feature that's not available to me, unless it was something real specific, which personally probably isn't going to apply to me. Like, I'm not doing a full on shoot with a giant crew for a narrative short film or something. So, I'm good, you know?
Yeah. And it's going to be exciting to see if there's going to be more creators that are feeling a little bit the same thing that I feel, you know. When a new product drops, you have like 40 people doing the same kind of review.
Right.
It's basically, everyone is saying the same, and I'm no different. I'm not saying that, but I don't really like being part of that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No.
I know that I have to because of the embargoes and the NDAs. you can't choose. You know. Right. But you can definitely choose which products that you're in on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is funny. There was a while ago, I got to go to my very first, like, press event, which is all virtual, but it was for, you know, company was announcing new products before they came out. And then that was a thing where it was like all the YouTubers were there and it was, you know, we'll send you these. You can release your video on this date at this time. And I was like, oh, would it be okay if I didn't release a video on that time? Like, could I do it later? And they're like, well, if you do it in a couple of days, that's fine. I was like, yeah, it would probably be later than that too. And they're like, well, we'll just say no for now. I was like, okay, that's fine. Totally fine. But yeah, it was a thing of like, I would rather hang out with it, let it exist in the world for a while, and then put my video out a month later, which I know is terrible strategy, but
it just sort of fits. Though?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know, because I think people, I've said when the embargo videos come out, there's usually 2 people I watch. Gerald Undone, because that's going to tell me everything I need to know if he's done a video about the product. And you, because you're my friend and I want to see what you did, and it's probably going to be really fun and interesting. Pretty much don't watch any of the other ones, even when they're from channels I like, because like you said, I know you know, how many times I need to hear the specs? How many times do I need to...
Yeah, but you
to...
have this feeling like, here we go again, you know?
Yeah.
It's like... Tuck, tuck, tuck,
tuck, tuck. Yeah, and when you see the thing that pops up a month or two later, then it's kind of like, okay, this video might not just be because of the hype. It might be because now this person is super excited about this thing and actually wants to talk about it because it's brought something new to the table for them. I'm really interested in that.
Same here. And actually, that is why I'm wondering, like, would it be a good strategy, for example, if a company drops a new camera, like, would it be a good strategy of making it, like, 2 weeks later? Because you can just, like, be out of the noise of everyone else dropping a video? Or would it perform badly because everyone has already watched the other videos?
I mean, the only way to know is to experiment, but in my little... In my little one experience, the company was not interested in sending me a thing to make a video about later, which was fine. I was like, hey, you know, if I want to do it, I'll just buy the thing. It wasn't super expensive. But, you know, if you're talking about something like an expensive camera, that's different where it's like, well, if I can test this thing, it's either I can test it for free now or I'd have to pay $4,000 later. That is a tough decision because you'd have to be practical as a creator. You know, you can't personally buy everything that comes out because you will go broke very fast.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, also when it comes to those expensive cameras, when you get the opportunity, for example, like Sony, when they send over the camera, I usually have it for around a week. If I'm lucky, like 2 weeks. But what I've felt lately is that you don't have enough time. Right. Don't really have enough time in a week to be able to try out the camera fully and know how good it is and what kind of use it's going to be in your workflow and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, really the best reviews are the ones that come out 6 months or a year later, which is obviously terrible marketing for a company, but that's where, you know, I just talked about, I've had my camera for 4 months now and just last week was discovering new stuff about it that I hadn't gotten to use yet. Once you have something for a long time and you've put the hours into it, that's where, you know, your initial Sony a7S III video is how great the camera was. But now you also know, like, well, after 6 or 7 months, the screen might come loose. So what's the deal with that? Like, there's all these little things that pop up for a company that's terrible to go, like, we're going to release a product. Can't wait for a year from now when everyone's putting their reviews out. And I know people do short-term and long-term reviews and stuff, but it would be cool if a company, if it was sort of optional, like, okay, here's the thing. The embargo date is this, so definitely don't put anything out before this date. But otherwise, do what you want to do. And if you could have more time with the thing, and then even if it is, you know, 3 weeks or a month later or something where it's like, okay, here's really what this thing did for my workflow or didn't do or whatever. That, at least for the viewer, would be really useful. I don't know how the companies would feel about it.
I don't know. I would love to give it a try. And I'm also very interested in the concept that I wrote to you a while back. You know, if
the short video.
Yeah. I mean, like, how fun would that be if, like, there's a new drone released and people are saying, like, oh, is it worth buying this? And then you make a video with the title, like, is the new Mavic Air 2 worth buying? And then the entire video is yes. Like, how,
I love that. It's just yes. And then it's just like your logo and the video's over.
Yeah. That's like 5 seconds. It's like
YouTube shorts. There you go.
Drone. And then you're like, yes. Bam.
Yes. That's then, the whole review is like just that, you say yes, no.
Like straight to the point.
That's it. Well, Peter said yes, so it's a yes. Peter said no, it's a no. We don't need any of the details.
I promise you, if I do a video like that, people are going to say, like, oh, but you got to talk about the different specs and you got to try it out and you get blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. People want the short video, the goofy video. People want the long series video. That's why it's like, just go strap your camera to a car and have fun with it.
We have no clue. Yeah. Go strap a camera to the car and see if it works. And hopefully it does.
Yeah.
You know what? I actually got to go because it's starting to be a little bit late here. And I still don't know if I'm going to do the editing video or not.
Oh, no. Well, this was a great great talk. This is good for me. It's the beginning of the day, and then it like sets my like mental space for the rest of the day. So
it's always a good time with you, my friend.
Of course. I'll jump in here first. If you want to follow Peter, and for some reason you're not one of the 500,000 people who's doing so already, you can find him on YouTube and Instagram at PeterLindgren1, and it's all fun stuff, especially your Instagram. Like, if people want the day-to-day quick things, like Instagram stories are super fun. Definitely recommend people check those out.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely something for those of you listening. If you're not following me on Instagram, that is where I post most of my day-to-day things. And thank you, Tom. If you that are listening want to support Tom in his journey, then you can go follow him on Instagram at SoDarnTom or on his YouTube channel, Tom Buck.
That's me. All right. Well, we will play the outro music and see everybody next time.